This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from the director of the Michigan chapter of Enroll America on their efforts to educate people about health insurance exchanges, which will open October 1st as part of the Federal Affordable Care Act. But first, Congressman Fred Upton. The interview last Thursday started with questions about possible military action against Syria. Upton said at that time he was leaning against voting to authorize airstrikes, but said he would gather as much information as he could and was planning to attend classified briefings. That part of the interview can be heard at WMUK.org. We then moved on to other topics. MLive Kalamazoo reporter Yvonne Zipp joined me for the interview with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton.
I also wanted to ask Fred about the proposal to perhaps reduce food stamps by $40 billion over 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know what the details of that are. So this goes back to a debate that we had earlier this summer. The Farm Bill included, as it traditionally has over the last number of decades, really two major components. One is the ag side, you know, whether it be peanuts or rice or corn, whatever it might be, crop insurance. The other one is the nutrition side, or what we call the SNAP side, food assistance, supplemental nutritional assistance program, SNAP. The Senate bill, when it passed, included $20 billion in savings on the SNAP side. It passed with a strong bipartisan majority, 3-1, I want to say it was, back in May or early June. The House bill, you'll remember, failed and was then brought back in the design was to bring it up into two pieces, one being the ag side, and that narrowly passed. I want to say it was the first week in April in the House. I'm sorry, August, leaving the SNAP side undone. There is thought that early, once we return, the SNAP side is going to be brought up again with $40 billion in savings. This is over 5 years versus the $20 billion that's in the Senate provision. For me, I want to see what the savings are. I have not seen the proposal. I'm anxious to see it. You know, I can't tell you how I'm going to vote till I see what is there. My guess is, well, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think we do get a farm bill, as we need to get one done, not a one-year extension. I think it'll lapse maybe a week or two. The current farm legislation expires the end of September. So we might go into the second week or so of October, and really there's no harm done unless you get to Thanksgiving time in terms of the farm bill. But I think we'll end up resolving the issue not only on SNAP but also on the farm provision. I think that the bottom line is it will pass with a pretty strong bipartisan vote, particularly crop insurance, which is so important to our local growers here. Of course, last year we had that huge freeze that just decimated the apple and cherry crop here in Michigan. And to her credit, Debbie Stabenow was able to get some provisions in that Senate bill. I think that they'll be in the final package that's done. But I can't tell you about the SNAP because we haven't seen any proposal coming back at us yet. But we'll see some savings for sure. And if you don't get the $40 billion in savings, let's say you go along with the Senate, the $20 billion. So, you know, if you think about things, all right, so the Senate's at 20, the House is at 40, you end up at 30, all right? That's sort of a little bit of a rule of thumb that people understand. You know, at the end of the day, if you only get the $20 billion in the Senate, there's other issues where we're going to be looking for budget savings, particularly in the debt ceiling. And that debate now is going to come up a little bit earlier than we thought. Originally, we thought that the debt ceiling, we'd bump that maybe in mid-November. Now it looks like it'll be mid-October. So there's a number of ways where you can have a second crack at the apple in terms of savings that make sense that may or may not be part of the farm bill. And with we have not a lot of legislative days in September. I want to say 9. Starting next week, and we have this major issue now, Syria, on the plate that nobody thought was going to be there even a week ago. So, you know, you well could see that moved into the debt ceiling issue later on in the month. We'll see.
Can I ask a quick follow-up? There was a U.S. Department of Agriculture data that came out today, and you may not have had a chance.
I've not seen it.
Yeah. It was showing that 500,000 Michigan households reported serious problems affording adequate nutritious food at some point last year. For 200,000 of them, one or more household members had reduced their food intake at least sometime during the year. This was between 2010 and 2012. That's the same amount during the recession, between 2007 and 2009. So even though the economy has improved some, the number of hungry in Michigan hasn't gone down, according to this data, anyway.
Yeah, you're right. I've not seen the study.
Sure.
I'm anxious to see it, and I'm anxious to see what savings they promote. I think that I don't know that anyone's talking about reduction in assistance for folks that qualify for SNAP. And in many cases, as you know, it's run by the states. So, but I'll look to see what the balance is. And I expect it relatively early, at least when we left last month to come home. We knew that it was an issue that was going to pop up, particularly knowing that the Farm Bill itself was going to be split into two pieces. And thank goodness we passed the ag side of it before we left.
On health care, you wrote a piece that ran on Fox News' website saying Mr. Obama.
I didn't know, but I was as surprised as everybody else. All of a sudden, I'm on the. I said, oh, there's my name. What's going on?
Heart skips a beat. Republicans do have health care solutions, and you lay out some ideas, including protecting people with pre-existing conditions, expanding affordable options, strengthening the safety net. What are some specifics about how to do that and how to do it in a way that is affordable?
Well, let's face it. The Republicans don't have the White House or the Senate, but we wanted to send the message that if everything did collapse, defunding, whatever you want to call the Affordable Care Act, where would Republicans be? And we do have a plan. We tried to offer it as a substitute on the House floor back when this bill passed five years ago. And it was defeated on a party line vote. We offered a number of amendments in the Energy and Commerce Committee, a committee that I now chair, on a number of things where we can build in support of health care reforms. Maybe some colleagues didn't think that we should do anything. I'm not among those. Whether it's trying to reduce premiums and do it with tort reform and ways to do that, allowing businesses and individuals to purchase health insurance across state lines, I thought was a good idea. Frankly, what Tom George did here when he was a state senator in Kalamazoo in terms of a healthy lifestyle for individuals was a very positive thing to encourage people, whether it be diet or anti-smoking or exercise, all those different things with health savings accounts, was a very positive approach and something that's relatively dismissed on the Affordable Care Act that the president signed into law. Having children up to 25 or 26 years old on their parents' policy was a plan that most Republicans, I think, could and would support. Certainly I do. And taking away the disapproval by insurance companies for those with pre-existing illnesses, again, that is a policy that I think is bipartisan and was part of the Affordable Care Act. But certainly if it was somehow dismissed, it would reemerge as part of what I think would be, frankly, not only a Republican plan, but a bipartisan plan to fill in that gap. And so that's, I wrote this piece in large part because for those that said, well, where are the Republicans? They have no ideas. They've got no alternative to fall back on. Well, in fact, that's not true. And so not only are these good ideas, but I also know that as I talk to my Republican colleagues, not only on my committee, but also even the more conservative ones, what we call the RSC group, the Republican Study Group, even they are strong proponents of virtually everything that I included in that piece.
At some point, though, when you continue to vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, aren't you not sending the message that simply of obstructionism? And is there a point after a Supreme Court ruling that upheld the law and an election in which President Obama was returned to office that you say, okay, we have some ideas, but we have to work within the framework of the Affordable Care Act because it's the law of the land?
Well, you'll remember that the president, even earlier this year, by who knows what order, decided to delay the employer mandate for a year. That's not in the law. It was just a regulation that he came up with. And in fact, we embraced it with a vote on the House floor that even included Gary Peters, the likely Senate nominee for U.S. Senate here in Michigan, was one of the 35 or so Democrats that voted with almost all of the Republicans to delay it for a year. You'll remember, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, there was a provision that was, I can remember this, on page 737 that was going to require every small business that literally spent more than, I want to say, $200 on anything, gasoline, you know, cell phones, whatever it was, to separately file a 1099 with the IRS. Not only AT&T, if it was cell phones, but also, you know, Upton Builders or whoever it was that was a part of that. And, you know, thank goodness the president signed the bill that repealed that provision. You've got some other things, the CLASS Act and some other things that were parts of this that are counted as votes to be repealed. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want to say literally we've had maybe 3, 4, maybe 5 votes over the last 3 years to totally repeal it. The others have been on different pieces of it, and oftentimes they've had bipartisan support, as we saw with the delay of the employer mandate. So it is on people's minds. I mean, it comes up. I have a little coffee group that sort of keep my feet on the ground up in Plainwell, and that was the second question after Syria today was on the Affordable Care Act at the old mill there just east of town. It's a little group that gets together, and they were well prepared, as they usually are, and lots of questions. And you know, small businesses, and I've been touring many of them throughout this last month, they're fit to be tied about these regulations and how it's going to play. I talked to a woman earlier this week, runs an ice cream shop. She has Aetna insurance. She has no clue what it's going to mean for them. And her husband is a cancer survivor. They've got a number of employees that are hardworking. This is a place that stays open until there's no one in line, mom and pop place. And there's true concerns about what does this mean. And I understand what the state went through with our state legislators and whether they should expand Medicaid expansion. But in my view, they were dealt a very bad hand and trying to deal with the best of it. But at the end of the day, you know, as people begin to sign up for this in just a couple of weeks, no one has a clue what it means for them or their families, what their premiums are going to do. And it really is not ready for prime time. And I'm hoping that at least a minimum, we can get the whole thing delayed for a year because it really is not ready. And as when I sit down with folks here, Stryker is a major employer, of course, they know that they're going to be taxed $100 million this year. That's $100 million that they're not going to invest here in Kalamazoo Portage. They have to compete with their counterparts across the globe. And they're at a real disadvantage because they have a larger percentage of U.S. sales than their counterparts. Well, we're going to try to repeal the medical device tax. And again, that has bipartisan support. And I suppose that'll be viewed as yet another vote to repeal Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And even the president, by the way, refers to it as Obamacare. So there's no slight here that I'm intending to make. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that we have a decent chance of, in fact, repealing that medical device tax, which locally certainly will have a very positive impact if we can do that.
Yvonne?
In terms of the amount of work facing Congress when you guys get back next week, this is going to be a jam-packed fall. Can it all get done?
Well, it has to. Let's face it. Syria, though, will be off the table, I think, quickly. Whether it's next week or the following week, it'll be resolved one way or the other. Then we'll see what the president does. My own prediction is that the House does not pass this resolution that the president wants, but we'll see. And we'll see what happens regardless of, you know, one way or the other. We have a continuing resolution. My sense is that we will try to extend to fund everything at the sequestered level. It means no add-ons, no earmarks, probably close to the end of the year. So in essence, about a 3-month extension, 2 to 3 month extension, and gives us a little time to let the appropriators do their work. And as you know, the Senate has not passed a single appropriation bill. I think the House has passed 4. But this will allow us to maybe try to reach a grand bargain or whatever to get this thing done in the fiscal year 14 funding levels done at the, before the end of the year. You got the debt ceiling, and again, that's a little jam-packed. When we left in August, we thought it would be mid-November. Now it looks like it'll be mid-October. And work is now beginning to start on that. No one wants the nation to default. You can imagine what would happen. There'll likely be a vote, a straight-up extension of the debt ceiling. I expect that to fail miserably. And that happened 2 years ago, and I want to say it failed 2-1 in the House. And I think that just sends the word out that I guess things have to – you got to have some real spending reforms if you're going to see that pass. But that's always a tough vote. But that'll be in early October. You know, for us on energy, and we've been waiting on Keystone for a long time, and, you know, as you look at this trouble in the Middle East, you know, not only whether it be Syria, but Egypt and everything else, for me, I would, you know, I've said this for a long time, I'd like to stick it to the Middle East in terms of, you know, being able to wean ourselves off the oil that they send us. And the Keystone Pipeline remains a bipartisan, strong issue. We passed it in the House, came through my committee, almost with enough votes to override a veto. We're likely to see that as an early issue in the Senate when they return. They're dealing with an energy efficiency bill, and it's my understanding that Senator Hoeven from North Dakota has got an amendment that's germane and will be allowed to be offered. And I can remember that on a non-binding issue, the Senate budget back in March, they were able to get 62 votes in support of the Keystone Pipeline. And as you know, it's been some 1,800 days that we've not been able to get a green light or a red light. Canada said just a week or so ago that they're now looking at building their pipeline through Canada to the East Coast, where they're actually be closer to the India market in the East, you know, from that point than going from the West, Vancouver or whatever. So we're in the real potential of losing access to that, as much as 6 million barrels a day that they would like to send us by the year 2030.
But back to Yvonne's question, it's mostly about, you know, can you get to all this stuff? I mean, Keystone Pipeline, immigration, I mean, aren't some of these big ticket items
immigration is
going to be tough with Syria, the debt ceiling, yep. more pressing issues?
We have a very heavy plate, but yes, I think that we're going to get them resolved. You have to resolve the continuing resolution because the fiscal year ends September 30th. So that's, you know, you're going to have to deal with the debt ceiling because you can't not deal with it. The ag bill, we talked about that earlier. I think we're going to get a bill by the mid-October. Immigration is there too. That's an issue that really is better in 2013 than it is 2014. And at least when I left, it looked like we were going to be looking at individual pieces of bills probably in mid-October. Maybe that slips a week or two now because of the Syria question. But I think by Thanksgiving, we'll be well underway to at least see a House position that can then go to conference with the Senate on immigration. So, yeah, we got a lot of heavy lifting to do. We'll be pushing Christmas.
Okay, we are down to just a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about the U.S. financial system. We are approaching rapidly the five-year anniversary of the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And then, of course, there was a series of actions the government took. But there's some real questions raised. The article in The New Yorker by John Cassidy, in which he says some necessary reforms have been introduced, but they haven't gone far enough. As a result, there's still the potential for another crisis, another bailout, and another angry populace. Do you believe that the U.S. financial system is on much more stable ground than it was 5 years ago?
You know, I don't know. I've not seen the story. I would say that, you know, I look at Detroit. We've had that question about potential bailout. The answer is no. As we look at what happened before, it was almost a panicked Bush administration who came to the House. And I can remember our leadership blanked white. I mean, they were just aghast over the news that we were going to need to shore up the system that we did before. It was a tough struggle. And at the end of the day, many of those companies survived, whether it be the auto industry, which is a little different tangent, but I don't want to get into that. And they did survive well. GM, good news, GM this week. But in terms of the financial system, I don't see any signs of real distress, at least not that have come via the administration. Now, I don't sit on the Financial Services Committee. I'm not been privy to any special briefings along that line.
But did we see any necessarily in the summer of 2008?
Yeah, and that came quickly. That was, it was all of a sudden, it was like September, end of September, and it was like needed to happen. And you remember the vote, first vote failed, and the market tanked about 700 points literally in a half hour. And then we came back and supported a bill that really did save the system and financial collapse that would have happened for sure without it. And, you know, there were strings there. A lot of the money was paid back. Some obviously wasn't. But I don't see the same warning signs. But I will say this. We do have to get our financial house in order. That's why it's important that we see deficit reduction, that we see, you know, continued focus on that. And the good news, of course, is that spending is less this year than last. And the deficit is going to be about $500 billion less this year than it was last. We need to continue on a path that gets to economic solvency there to a balanced budget, which I think we can do ultimately. It's going to take a little while, but as it relates directly to your question, I don't sense the same warning signals. But again, we didn't see them, you know, a number of years ago either.
Congressman Fred Upton, thank you for your time.
You bet.
Fred Upton is the chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House. He represents Michigan's 6th District in the southwest corner of the state. Thanks again as well to Yvonne Zipp of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much for having me.